We're joined now by Dr. Melba Ketchum. She has a doctorate in veterinary medicine, founded a company called DNA Diagnostics, which does DNA testing on human and animal forensics, and also specializes in species identification, which certainly fits the bill what we're talking about tonight. Dr. Ketchum, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I have to wonder, are you crazy to get involved in something like this? This can't possibly help your reputation.
Oh, probably.
Have you caught any grief, even the limited amount of work that you've done on it?
I was pretty well established before this came along, so at this point it doesn't matter what other people think.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Are you hooked on the story, on the mystery?
Somewhat. I was a total skeptic, I would say. A little more than a year ago, I was a total skeptic. And that has since changed.
What changed it?
Some unusual findings on some of the research we've done.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, last year, Dave's group sent in some samples. And frankly, we started getting these samples back in 1995. And we've fiddled with them all these years. And they always come out either a raccoon or a horse or something common. And I've never had any of them to turn out like I thought they might. So I decided, okay, apes run on human primers or human tests, and if these things are apes, they'll show up, and if they're human, they'll show up. So I started just screening these things for convenience sake, and one of Dave's samples showed up with a very strange peak in a location that it shouldn't have been, and it was a visual male, and it was a sex marker, and it showed up as a female with a peak where it was not supposed to be located. And I reran the thing, and it still showed an unusual band there or peak there. And so I decided that, you know, this is not normal. And, of course, one sample is not going to help. And regrettably, I used up the DNA because, as Dave referred to earlier, these samples are very – the hair samples are hard to get a good yield of DNA from. And at that time, I didn't believe in it, so I just screened right through it. And this kind of changed my mind, and I was a little more curious about it at that point.
When you talk about it peaking, you mean peaking like on a chart?
The electropherograms, which is a graphic representation of the DNA fragment.
David, where did you get this particular sample?
This one came out of Northern California, right on the Oregon border.
And how did you get it? I mean, you just found that somebody found it on a fence, or and why would you associate it with a Bigfoot?
Well, the first one we had came out of a story in Hoopa where a woman lived on the perimeter of the reservation. And in the middle of the night, she had her perimeter motion light go on. She looked out the window, and she saw something rummaging through her garbage pile on the side yard. And she just saw a couple of arms hanging over the side, and she thought it was some kind of prowler. And her brother-in-law was a police officer on duty, so she called, and she said there was a prowler out there. So they responded to police officers. He went out, they said, we'll try to get a better description. So she walked over to the door and looked out the side. Saw it was a Bigfoot leaning over the top of this metal shed, rummaging through her bags of garbage. And she heard the sirens coming, lights were coming, and just as these guys were pulling into the yard, the Bigfoot went into the Douglas fir trees. And one of the sergeants has since died, but the other one that was still alive, the guy told me it was one of the most scary things he ever had encountered, because as he got out of the car, he could still feel the earth moving from this thing walking maybe 100 feet away in the woods.
David had told me, Dr. Ketchum, David had told me that you have been partially influenced in your willingness to proceed with this kind of research by comments made by some of your colleagues. And David, I know in Tribal Bigfoot, you mentioned this guy, Dr. Rogers, who was, I guess, out with the Monster Quest team, and he came to the opinion that a hair sample that he had was, quote, like no other hair he has seen, doesn't match mammals' hair in North America, certainly isn't a bear, and it looks kind of human. Is that part of the opinion that Dr. Ketchum helped change your mind?
Well, I've got a team assembled of really high-quality scientists, and the way we've set this thing up, we do have all hair samples screened by a forensic supervisor who does hair on a regular basis. And yes, some of the samples that we receive are not real, and he knows it right away. But those that he cannot identify, they go into the actual program. And yes, there are hairs that can't be identified.
So how do you reconcile that? Meaning they can't identify them, it's something we just don't know what it is, or you just don't have enough of a sample, or a combination of the two, or what?
Well, they have certain human characteristics about them, and then they turn around and they also have animal characteristics. It's a strange, and in light of trying to be without an opinion, we call them just unknowns. And at that point, then they go into the DNA, where, you know, we actually can do species ID.
How many of those do you have?
Oh, quite a number. I actually haven't counted them recently, but there's quite a few.
And what other explanations would there be? What's the range of explanations that you think would be possible or on your list?
Well, maybe just aberrant hair that's not really growing normally from another animal or something, but there's really not a lot of explanation to cover it, because hair analysts are usually pretty doggone good at least narrowing down the different species.
So David was telling us that you need a hair with a follicle, right? Do you have one of those?
Yes, we have a few of those. More without than with, though, regrettably. We actually like to see a little tissue tags hanging on the end of the root. Those are the ones that are just really premium as far as for giving us the DNA we need at this point.
Let's do a hypothetical here. Let's say you get a clump of hair. It's got some follicles on it. You run the test and DNA. Is there such a thing as a positive, proof positive that this is some other kind of primate species?
Well, we can't go there verbally at this time. Let's just say that we've got some fairly compelling evidence so far, but we're going to nail the coffin shut before we publish, because we want to make sure that skeptics can't question anything we've done. We're doing these like forensic cases.
Okay. Well, I understand that you don't want to let the cat out of the bag about anything you have right now. I'm just wondering, in a hypothetical, a general sense, is there a way that you can prove it beyond any doubt?
Yes.
And would it be that if you can't identify what the species is, I wonder, how do you prove that it is like a Bigfoot then?
Well, you're going to compare it to other species and see what it's similar to.
Right.
And, just hypothetically, if it shows more in its DNA sequence, it shows more ape bases, then you could say, well, it's a type of ape. If it shows something aligning more with human, then you would say, you know, it's a new brand of human. And if it's, somewhere in between, you might consider it a cross. Or if it's got ancient bases, you could call it a Neanderthal or a Neanderthal cross.
Wow, that's fascinating. And can you tell me what the protocol would be? I deal a lot with the UFO topic, and I always wonder what would happen if they had confirmed evidence of something like that. What was the protocol that you would follow if you nailed it down?
Well, the first thing we do, like I say, is we validate everything we're doing first. We make sure it's working. And then we come in with our unknown samples, and we take pictures of them, measure them, do everything to catalog them, just like you would a forensic case, make sure chain of custody is as intact as you can get it. And then you start with your testing. As soon as we get them back, if it's hair, we get it back from the hair analyst, then we move forward with usually mitochondrial testing, which is, of course, maternally inherited. It comes from your mother. And that gives you species ID information. It gives you... Well, it just gives you a lot of information, quite frankly. Origins of the maternal lineage. And then once that's completed, then you would go forward into nuclear testing.
Well, let's say, though, you follow all those steps. You've got it down. You're convinced you've got the real deal there. How do you announce it to the world, or do you?
Oh, yeah, we'll announce it.
Would you hold a news conference, write a paper?
Yes. Well, both. There'll be a peer-reviewed paper produced. Because that's the only way to do it right.